Welcome to The Interactive Journey. Come along with us as we share the stories of parents, children, and professionals navigating a challenging world of various diagnoses, life transitions, and being human.
Welcome to The Interactive Journey.
Welcome.
As I stare at Logan. Hi, Logan. Why don't you bring us in? What are we doing today?
We're going to talk to Angela Presner. That's all I got.
Angela is here again. This is her second time on our podcast.
The only person who's been on our podcast twice.
You should get some kind of award.
Yeah, you should go back and listen to the first one.
Yes.
Advice to everyone else listening.
Angela is one of our amazing behavior consultants here. She's been with us for 2 years.
Wow, that was fast.
I thought she was just like peacing out over there.
She held up the peace sign to signal to me 2 years. Although I did know, and I knew because I was the first person to interview Angela. Do you remember? Best day of your life?
Yes.
Do you remember our phone call?
It was a very pregnant call.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anything about the phone call? Do you remember anything that you said to me during that initial phone call?
I have to be honest and say no.
Okay.
You called me right away, though.
I did.
Like, I put in the application, and I had done my research ahead of time because I wasn't leaving a job after 15 years to just go anywhere. Wasn't going to happen. But I remember I put in my application on Indeed, and I swear you called me like right away. And I'm like, oh, hello.
We're pretty quick.
Sometimes I'm incredibly responsive and sometimes I'm not, right, Logan?
I applied through Indeed, and I was hired like a day and a half later. So we're pretty responsive.
Yes.
We know what we want.
Yes.
Well, what I remember from the conversation, I can actually picture talking to you in the office, and one of the things that you said to me was you wanted to, not that you weren't, but you wanted to work for an agency where the culture was really, really good and really, really strong. And I was like, well, heck yeah, that's us for sure. And also, I told you that two women owned the company and you were like, oh, sign me up.
Yes, I love that.
Thank you.
No, I think it's great because I think there's this level of understanding that people have families and women have careers and families and could do both. But sometimes we have to realize that at this moment, this is important. And at this moment, this is important. And everybody's very accommodating and understanding of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, flexibility, honestly, that's always been something that's been so important. One of the reasons why I left my previous job was not because only that this was so exciting to be able to do consultation and work with families and things like that, but was for the flexibility. Mm-hmm. I had not yet had children. I saw Melissa having a baby at home and how challenging it could be when you have a baby who also has, you know, maybe some reflux and things like that. And you need to give some attention to and be able to work. And I don't have any problem working till late at night. Neither did Melissa. And that's kind of where it started. And then honestly, I left where I was and a month and a half later, I was pregnant. So it just I think it was the stress of where I was before some of the situations that were happening right as I was about to leave. And now, you know, I've never really looked back. I've appreciated the experiences that I had. I loved the time that I spent where I was, but now I really have loved this more than anything. I feel like this is our legacy that we're leaving for all these different families, for our staff. I mean, our staff really is an extension of our family, and being able to provide those opportunities like you're talking about for us to have some flexibility, that's, we never want to change that.
And that was a big part of where I used to work, is that I didn't feel like, A, there was that positive family environment, and it wasn't on the coworkers who were on the same level, it was from the higher-ups.
Right.
Nobody felt really appreciated. The culture was going downhill because of that experience. So it was funny because I remember interviewing with Jackie McHugh and Steve Trout, and they're like, well, what are you looking for? And I was like, I want a positive work environment where people appreciate what you do. And Steve was like, well, that's it.
Check that box. Perfect. Yeah.
And it was so important to me. So, and that's exactly what I found.
Oh, good. That's wonderful.
I'm eternally grateful that you said yes. I wasn't going to let you go anyway.
I believe I got 6 phone calls in 2 days.
So what you mean by no is yes. What does that mean?
Which again, showed me, I was like, wow, okay, well, they really care. And the last one was Jackie, and she was just like, what questions do you want answered? Because you're going to come work with me.
She's very persuasive. I love that about her. She also knows when there's somebody who's going to be a good candidate and someone who is not
going to
fit in interactive kids. They may fit somewhere else and do an excellent job, but knowing what our culture is and what we can do, and she really takes every consultant under her wing to get them started, to get them running, as do the other people in those departments. But, I mean, I do really, really see that as something that's so important with getting people started here. But we need to know a little bit about where Angela came from. Like, how did you get to the point before you talked to Rachel on the phone that day?
So what happened was I was a special education teacher, mainly working with students with autism spectrum disorder in an out-of-district but public school placement for 13 years. And then one day I kind of woke up, and I always liked seeing what the BCBAs were doing. I always thought that would be so cool. But I remember it was the first day of my 12th year, and I woke up and I went, like, it was starting to feel like, I hate to say it, wash, rinse, and repeat.
Yeah.
I like a challenge. I like to constantly challenge myself and constantly reach further. And I had been in the same place for so long, and it wasn't enough of a challenge anymore. So that's when I decided to go back to school to get my master's degree and my BCBA certification. And I always said I would never go back to college, but I did. And somehow in a year and a half, I got done all of my coursework, which with three kids was really a fun
event. That's a huge accomplishment.
Wow.
I think it's hysterical that you said you'd never go back to school and you were a teacher. All my teacher friends really say the same thing. And a lot of them go back for whatever, either it's a certificate or going back for their master's degree.
Yeah.
But I think it just, when you come out of school from everything you've had to do to get to the point where you're a teacher, and then you're teaching all day, so to go to school, that's challenging, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Meg, would you go back to school now?
Absolutely, in a second. I love learning.
And what would you go for?
Well, it's funny, I always thought I'd go back for counseling, which is actually what my master's is in, counseling and school psych, only because at this point in my life, I'll be honest, I'm 47, I'll be 48, so counseling probably would be more fitting. I'm at the position where I'm not going to go back into being a consultant as my sole job at this point. But there is a little bit of me that wants to do maybe like an organizational behavior management or business leadership as like more of a general business leadership. That's very interesting. I've looked into the psychology of business course. Like, you know, it's Harvard or Yale or one of those has like an online program for that.
Yeah.
I find it really interesting because although ABA is where my heart is, there's also that larger culture of business and how people are being taught about business and what the heck is it that they're being taught to make successful businesses, and how does that then connect with ABA?
And I think it's so funny because so many people hear ABA and they think schools.
Right.
Yeah.
And they don't think about, there's police stations now that hire behavior analysts. The FBI hires behavior analysts. I've even heard of zoos hiring behavior analysts. So it's amazing. And a lot more HR departments are realizing that they can get more out of their employees by learning how to properly reinforce and maintain staff, you know, so you don't have all that turnover and that sort of thing. How can you increase, you know, staff performance and that sort of thing? So it's really neat how far the field of ABA has come.
Yes, and another area too is behavioral gerontology. There isn't a whole lot out of that.
I haven't even heard of it.
So I looked into it because my brother-in-law, who passed away a year and a half ago, he had early onset Alzheimer's. And my niece is a speech pathologist. My niece, Frances, Fran, the millennial caregiver. There you go. Look, she listens to us.
Shout out.
Where is she? Isn't she supposed to come on?
She's going to come on too.
Hi, Fran. I'm calling you.
But with all that started me looking into it because she wanted to talk to me about how can ABA, she has like a platform she does as well, just for caregivers to help support them. How can they use the principles of applied behavior analysis to support people who have Alzheimer's, dementia, other memory care, maybe even a little separate from brain injury, because I know we've worked with individuals who have brain injury pretty frequently. And this is really a growing field. There's a lot of work happening out of England. There's, you know, some real interest in that. And so I kind of started looking into that. And there's a whole special interest group in ABAI, Association of Behavior Analysis International, that is on behavioral gerontology. So very, very interesting.
It's actually kind of funny that you mentioned that, because early on in my career as a teacher, I worked a side job like most teachers do.
Right.
And I would work on the weekends and evenings with a woman who had Alzheimer's.
Uh-huh.
And I realized very quickly that I could utilize like different visuals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, a visual schedule was so helpful for her when she woke up in the morning and that sort of thing. I found myself pulling so many things that I did at work
mm-hmm.
into that setting because it just fit. It just related.
Right. So we use things like establishing routine,
mm-hmm.
right? The visual schedules, using visuals to label drawers, like, you know, your undershirts, underwear, things like that, socks, to be able to match that, you know, your socks go here. And I know it sounds like, gosh, this is adults, and actually adults who are very independent and quite successful for a long time, but they still can maintain some level of independence for a long time. And I will say my brother-in-law did maintain much more than I had ever expected.
Yeah.
And I think that largely because of the supports that my sister and her children were able to provide.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it is a really cool field. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where there's just not enough time to do it all, right?
It's true.
Right? So if we can do like OBM and then we can work with people who are little and work with people who are older. And, you know, there just is so much work to be done.
I always
have
a million ideas just like, what if we did this or that or the other thing?
So basically what you're saying is that you and Rachel and I should never be on a team only by ourselves.
No.
We're like idea people, Logan, you're an idea.
Oh, my gosh.
You'll shake it and you'll put it into practice.
Yeah.
So you'd have to be on our team with us.
We'd have.
I'll sit back and just be like, okay, so how are we doing that?
What's next? We would have 18
notebooks. I'm going to need a list.
Sticky notes everywhere.
I think it's great that we have 20 new ideas. Let's pick one to start.
Right, that's a therapist. Therapist.
Reel it in. Right,
let's pick
in.
One.
Right. Let's be realistic.
But also, you need those people. Like, you need both sides. I think because sometimes, I'll be honest, sometimes in this career, people I have kind of felt like have squashed that a bit. Like, no, it's too many. No, we can't. I get no's and why we can't do it. And I don't think we need to do everything that rolls out of my mouth. I absolutely don't. I mean, a lot of it can be just total junk.
Yeah, but it sounds nice sometimes.
It does. But I am an external processor, so that's how I get to the end point.
Yep.
I have to talk about all the stupid ideas to get them out of my head to get to the good ones. So, yeah.
Well, and it's true. Sometimes you think it through and you're like, oh, wait. That wouldn't work because of this. But it leads you to another idea.
Right, right. I mean, I think probably, and don't tell me if I'm wrong or tell me your perspective on this, as a teacher, there's a certain level of organization and planning that you have to be able to do.
Oh, absolutely.
So those ideas that you have, like, has that ever helped you with, I think, some of the training as a teacher?
Oh, absolutely. I find that teachers now respond to me really well because I have that experience, mm-hmm. and I let them know right from the beginning because I'm realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give you a behavior plan when it's the teacher and the TA in the classroom, and here's the student that every minute earns a token, and then after 5 tokens gets a movement break out in the hallway. No, that's not realistic. It's
right.
not going to be implemented with integrity because it's impossible in that situation to implement that with integrity. So I think I have that piece of it where I understand some things are possible and some things are not. So it's more important to put something effective in place that's sustainable and that will actually work than something that they do every now and then, maybe when they have extra help in the room.
Right, that makes sense. I think we should talk about just for a second what exactly you do now, because we kind of talked about where you were before, how you came here, and then that you're a consultant. But what exactly does a week or day or
sure.
schedule for you look like?
Well, at my old job, I ended up doing it an additional 2 years as an autism consultant, which basically is the same thing. It was just the title that they gave it. And then I came here and became a behavior consultant. So my typical day, I love that there's a little bit of flexibility. So when I have shared custody of my kids. So when I have my kids, I can drop them off at school and then go to where I'm going and go about my day, get my work done. When I don't have them, I can get there earlier, I put in longer hours, that sort of thing, which is so nice. But my typical day kind of depends on where I'm at. So I have, right now I'm working with an adult program, and it's an adult day program. So I meet with a staff member there, we discuss my schedule for the week, where I'm most needed, that sort of thing. And then I just moved from location to location. And I'm actually coming back to being an in-district consultant now. So it was kind of fun. I was in a school this morning and I was like, I miss being in the schools. So I kind of have a little experience in every area. But it is, I go in, I observe students, I take consult notes, I give teacher recommendations, I create materials, I write behavior plans, I put things in place to help assist them with how we can have a student improve. I've had teachers go, there's nothing that will ever work. And then you prove to them that there's something that works. And they're just kind of like, what? It's just a matter of finding it. Like when people say, oh, this student doesn't like anything. Everybody likes something.
Yes, right.
It's just a matter of figuring out what that thing is.
Mm-hmm. What do you think your greatest strength is as a consultant?
I think I'm good with people. The nicest people I can interact with, and then I know the other side of things, so I can understand where maybe an administrator or a parent is coming from a place where they're frustrated or upset because, you know, I've been in the role of being a parent of a child with special needs, and I know how that can be. So I can be empathetic and know how to talk to people in the appropriate way to handle that situation.
Okay. What do you think, though, would be helful to BCBAs in working in the schools? Like, what kind of things do you think that they're struggling with? What kind of things do you think they could use a little help with?
I think part of the biggest thing I've run into is stress management. You have to know yourself, and it's hard because, you know, as a parent, you worry about your own children. But as a behaviorist, you worry about so many children. I can't tell you how many times I've lost sleep over other people's children. So it's very important to learn when to turn it off, when you need a break, to find hobbies that help take you out of that. Like, I'm actually one of those rare people that likes to work out. So I'll get up early in the morning and go work out to help relieve some of that stress. Mm-hmm. Because if you keep putting it on yourself and thinking, like, what else could I do? How, you know, you want to help everybody be better in a day, and it's not possible.
Yeah. Yes. You want to change the world, and you
really
are changing the world, but it's not an overnight process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you wish that all the BCBs would know from a parent's perspective?
So from a parent's perspective, I actually kind of want to flip that question a little.
Okay.
What I'd prefer from parents to know from a BCBA perspective,
okay,
is I think that parents miss out on that human factor. They don't realize that we're humans too. And they picture probably our homes where our kids are so well behaved and
they're
great and they do everything they're supposed to do because we're behaviorists. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not quite the case.
Nope,
so
nope.
We're not coming into your home or working with your child or adult and judging you in any way, because there are days I go home, no, this is not what we're doing. You know, we're following the schedule, we're doing this. And there's other days my kids ask me for the iPad 850 times and I've worked to do it. And I'm like, just take the iPad. You know, so we are all human and we all understand that we can't always, you know, be on top of things. We try our best, but it really isn't like that. We do understand where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, if you're still telling your kids to get a shower, brush their teeth, put their deodorant on at 14 and 16 years old, not speaking from personal experience.
No experience.
So, Angela, tell us about your three little cherubs.
Well, so my youngest, he's 5. I like Noah. I like to call him the honey badger. That's been his nickname since he's little, because he will do the opposite of everything you want. But he's so cute that he can get away with it.
And he knows it.
He's actually in the process now of getting evaluated for like speech and OT and possibly ADD now that he's transitioned to full day kindergarten. My daughter, she is 8 going on 15. I frequently tell her I am not currently hiring management positions and that she does not work here because she thinks she's in charge of her brothers.
So she's a bossy girl.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yes. It's very easy to say. I try to tell myself she's going to be a leader.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. She just, if you channel that right, that is going to be so great yes. for her and what she can do when she gets older.
Although I am bribing her that if she gets the kindness award one of these months at school, I'll buy her some more Babysitter Club books because I want her to learn that side of it too.
Wait, are they balance. Are they
yeah.
back?
Yeah. Yes.
You're kidding.
And yeah. now they're like graphic novels.
I love this because I used to be bribed with books.
Yes.
Like, I'll do anything for a good book.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. So will I.
But the Babysitter's Club? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I don't know that I ever read them because I felt like in school they pushed it.
Yeah, you probably were an in-betweener with yeah. independent
Sweet Valley High. Oh, my gosh.
Rachel, yes. we know yes. we're transporting back.
Isn't it crazy? Like when you get older, then you like, remember things. You're like, oh, I totally forgot about that.
She's heading to Barnes and Nobles after uh-huh. this.
Oh,
I could get lost in a Barnes and Nobles.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
And what's her name?
That's Sophia, but we call her Fifi.
Okay,
which fits her sass, her sassitude, as I like to call it.
Sassitude.
Yes. My oldest, he is about to turn 11. He has had an IEP since first grade, and I love him to death. He is mama's boy. When I was recently in the hospital, and you better believe he was checking up on me constantly. As soon as I came home, he was right next to me in bed, like listening to his tablet. But anytime you need anything, mom, I'm right here.
Oh,
such a mommy's boy. I love it. And he's diagnosed with ADHD, and he's in the process of being diagnosed with ASD level 1, which I've kind of always known he had, but it wasn't really worth pursuing until now. But as a child gets older, you know, doctors are a little less, you know, they're a little more leery about placing that diagnosis.
Right.
So his doctor's taking her time. But one of the things that I think is so cool is he actually attended the social skills camp this past summer mm-hmm. at Interactive Kids, and I see the difference, and I love it. Like, I'll hear him at the bus stop, and he's learned to tone it down a little. I can't imagine where he's learned to be over the top. But he's learned when he needs to tone it down for that audience. But he's also learned things, like he'll come up, he loves to talk about battles, and history and all that sort of thing. And he'll come up, and it used to be he would interrupt and then just go on and on and on, and you couldn't even get a word in edgewise. Now he'll come up, go to interrupt, and then stop himself, look and read the visual cues that two people are looking at each other talking, mm-hmm. and he'll wait, which is huge and helps save my sanity.
That's awesome. Wow. So. Good to hear. How's the school year been for you as a parent?
This school year's been a little challenging just because with my youngest going and going through evaluations with him, and my daughter just got evaluated for speech, that sort of thing. So now all three kind of have something. So it's a matter of trying to find that balance of making sure that everybody's covered. And my oldest, he's getting to that age where it's very typical that he doesn't want to go to school. So I'm like, What do you have for homework? I don't have homework. Yeah, pull out your book. Show me what you have to do, which is very age appropriate, but it's just a little harder to find that balance. Although he just got a cell phone for Christmas, so he's not allowed to use that until all his work is done.
Okay.
That works.
And what's his name?
John.
John, okay.
Or we call him J.E. too.
Okay. Now, what about this year as a consultant? What's the climate been for you?
So, honestly, I felt like I've been on my own island a little bit just because I've been working in this adult day program by myself, mm-hmm. you know, with obviously the staff from that program, but not other Interactive Kids staff. So I make a lot of effort to be involved where I can be to still be a part of the mix. And I'm also the RBT coordinator, so I do get to talk to a lot of the new hires and some of our RBTs who are providing direct care in the schools, which is nice because I still get to stay somewhat part of the action. But I am excited now that I'm coming back into the schools because I did miss it. Yeah, I'm going to miss where I am now too, though. So.
I'm sure they're going to miss you.
For those who need a reminder, don't know, RBT is a registered behavior technician. It's a credential that someone who works directly with our clients can pursue and receive after receiving 40 hours of training and being determined competent through those who observe them, and then passing a test through the BACB, Behavior Analyst Certification Board. And you can go to BACB.com,
yes,
in order to get some more information about that. Because I really, I mean, I advertisers, my commercial for it, I think it is just an excellent credential. It gives someone at least a starting block. You're not going to be an expert in everything you learn there, but it certainly gives you that initial training that you need, and then having to use the practical skills to be able to take that and implement it in your job is really important.
And not only that, we see so many staff that get that RBT credential and then decide that they want to go on to be a BCBA or a BCABA. Right. They fall in love with it, mm-hmm. and then they make a career out of it. Or how else can I help? I want to be part of social skills, or I want to be a part of this. So it helps draw out those extra parts that make them more of a career, make more of a career out of working directly with individuals who have special needs.
What drew you to the field?
So it's kind of funny. I actually wanted to be a teacher from the time I started kindergarten. Always wanted to be a teacher. And then when I was older, I worked as a summer camp counselor. I want to say I was like 16. My very first day, there was a student, a camper that they were going to kick out. And he jumped out of a window of a cabin. But it was like a big open window. It wasn't, it was like an outdoor cabin. And they were on the verge of kicking this student out. And I started talking with him, and he just responded so well to me. So he was able to come back the next day. And next thing you know, little by little, every camper that had some sort of need or modification or needed that extra attention was in my group. And I just realized, wait a minute, I think that I'm onto something here. And at that point, I no longer wanted to be a general education teacher. I wanted to be a special ed teacher.
I have a question for everyone that I just thought of. Do you guys think of this career as a calling?
I do.
Do you?
I do, because if it's not, I think you get weeded out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It's hard. It is a hard career to get into. And it's not any harder than being a teacher. It's just different than that. So I don't want to diminish mm-hmm. your teaching absolutely. Experiences or anyone else who works in the field in a different capacity. But if you don't like the possibility of having to deal with aggressive behavior, people throwing things at you, hurting themselves, seeing sometimes some really traumatic things in your life, if you can't manage that, this might not be the right field for you. It's a calling also because the inspiration that you get every day from the people that you're around is amazing.
Yeah.
Those who work directly with clients, it's a calling because although we pay more than we never ever have before, I know what the rates are out there for us and for other companies. And it's good, but I mean, it definitely could be more for what you go through. It's just, you know, we're subject to what we get within. We get reimbursed at, so we do the best that we can. But it would have to be a calling, especially those who work in school districts, who are employed by school districts. Some school districts pay such a minimal amount of money. Mm-hmm.
It's a true story.
To get paid up. Because sometimes you're a punching bag.
Yeah.
I mean, the best part, don't you think, like to me, the best part is when the light bulb clicks in whatever way, whether it's dealing with the challenging behaviors or when they learn something new or able to communicate yeah. with their talk or their mouth, their pictures instead of their actions. I mean, all of those, it's just so rewarding. So my take. Yes,
it's funny you say that because yesterday I was talking to one of the other directors and she had a light bulb moment with a student mm-hmm. and, you know, being removed in this position that I have, I'm removed from the students. So I have to get it through other people's mm-hmm. experiences.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's where like the reward kind of changes.
Yeah.
Well, I always say you can either do this job or you can't. There's no in between. You can't fake yeah. it till you make it. Mm-hmm. You're going to either fit very quickly or you can't, you know? And you have to have the heart. You have to genuinely care about the students, the clients, or you're never going to be able to make it through those hard times where it's a little stressful or you're kind of stuck on this one client. You're not sure what to do. So I really think you have to be really driven to help improve the lives of others. And it's not only on the student level when they're younger, it's when they get older. How are you going to make their life as quality as humanly possible, not only for them, but for their families?
Yeah, I definitely agree that it's a calling, mostly because I fell into it. Like, I had no idea that ABA even existed until I went to college and did my internship and was like, behavior? I like behavior stuff. And then I was like, I was scrolling on Indeed and was like, yeah, I could do that. Behavior therapist. And then I had no idea there was a whole other world behind it.
That's really interesting because many counselors that I encounter really don't want to be the interventionists, the direct interventionists with behavior.
Yeah. Changes. And I think when I got to my internship, I was more drawn to the behavior part of it. And they're like, you do know you're here for therapy, right? And I'm like, yes, but like, it's just such an interesting aspect of, it's the whole thing. So behavior is a part of it too. And yes, you're taking away the behaviors and thinking about the person and the environment and the and all those things. Yes, you can still do that and look at the behavior part of it because symptom management is the behaviors. And that's what you're expected to do as a therapist as well. So it was the whole piece of it.
The different parts of the field definitely do tie together. And I think the more that people look at that, the more they can understand.
Yeah.
Like, okay, as if we all work together as a team, we can be a lot more effective.
Yeah. It's nice being able to pull from like all the resources we have.
Absolutely.
Yes, because none of us can be good at everything.
No.
We try.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Speak for yourself.
And there comes the arrogance of behavior. No, that comes with every field. I mean, I see it with people who are definitely behavior analysts. And sometimes we have that reputation. But also, you know, an OT who says all behavior has to do with sensory needs, sensory seeking. Or a speech therapist to say it's only a communication strategy that needs to be applied. I'm making a broad generalization, OTs and speech therapists. But any, really, honestly, I remember being a teacher and really looking and seeing it was how it all came together. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lean towards ABA, but I couldn't have done what I've done without my speech therapist, OT, PT sometimes, the administrators that were there, 100% the people who work directly with all the students that we were with, we wouldn't have survived without that. So, I mean, it really took a village. And I would imagine working at a school that, although it's a public school, it is all individuals who have some type of special needs there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You see that.
And I really do find that everybody working together is effective because we learn, okay, this student needs coping skills. Mm-hmm. Okay, who's best to teach coping skills in a school? Mm-hmm. Right. Or this student is really having a hard time with communication. And I always like the quote, I'm a big dork, behavior is communication. It's kind of like, can you hear me now?
Yes.
And you need speech a lot of times for that help. How can we help this student effectively communicate with us? Even fine motor skills. Well, of course, you know, little Timmy's going to have a hard time during writing because his fine motor skills aren't there. So it really, it's a whole package.
Right. And that's why we have to look at it as a can't do or a won't do. Mm-hmm. So, right, are they physically, emotionally sometimes capable of doing this as you require them to, or you know, if it's that you're taking away something that they want, do they have the means of requesting it, protesting appropriately? There's so many pieces. You're absolutely right to look at all of them. It's mm-hmm. it's great. It takes a village.
And I'm a firm believer in everybody in the whole system is just as important, all the way from direct care staff all the way up to administration. If all those pieces aren't in place, it's not going to be successful. Mm-hmm. Everybody's just as important as the last. And one thing that people have given me as feedback is they appreciate the fact I would never ask of them something that I wouldn't do myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important because we can't expect, hey, I need you to go help the student change themselves. Or I need you to, you know, go assist the student who's having a major aggressive behavior without being willing to do that as well.
Mm-hmm. That was the, when I became a supervisor, that was the first piece of advice that my husband gave me because we worked together. We weren't married then. We weren't even dating. We were just coworkers, and that's what he said. He's like, just whatever you do, make sure you're not going to tell somebody to do something unless you're going to do it yourself. And I've really taken that to heart. And it's interesting when I do interviewing, when I look at people, especially for a consultant or above job, are you going to be able to do that? Are you somebody who went straight through with your college career, right into your master's program? Now you have a BCBA, but you have no practical or very little practical experience. That's okay. But you have to be willing to get dirty, to get your hands dirty. Yeah. I mean, I think of the staff we have over in our early learners program here in Church Road. They are so quick to ask. There's one staff over there, Meg, will come out, hey, can somebody help me change so-and-so? boom, those staff, those consultants, they're like, okay, sure, I'll be right there. Nick, who's the director, he's like, oh, yep, he drops everything to go help, because that's a very challenging person to change. And I love that. And everyone else here does that as well. I'm not trying to single out any one person or people, but I'm just really impressed by that. I mean, I see it with our consultation team that go into schools and into people's homes. They do jump in and they share those, like, hey, I need help with this. I just need some advice. What did you do with somebody like that? I can't get to this. Can you get to it? And I mean, it's not unique to Interactive Kids. Any successful organization is going to have that happen within it. So it's great.
But I do think it does show some of the family approach that Interactive Kids does have. Mm-hmm. Is I remember when I first started, I was kind of just thrown into the mix at first because I had all this experience prior, and I could walk up to anybody and ask them for help that within the company, and they would happily drop everything. And if they couldn't in that moment, I can't right now, but in an hour, I can help you with that. Yeah. Everybody was so quick to help, and even if it was from their own time, they were willing to step in and help with that, and it's amazing.
So with that, you work with a lot of different individuals. You have your coworkers, those who supervise you, those that you supervise, and then school districts and other providers that you work with. What are some resources that you would recommend, whether it's books, websites, whatever you can think of, that would be good tools for them to be more successful with what they're doing?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot because I actually had a book and I forgot. There are some really good books out there on Amazon on applied behavior analysis that have a lot of visuals. Mm-hmm. And you would think, and I actually used one of them to study for my BCBA exam because it helps break things down on a more understandable level. Because when you start using all the technical jargon, mm-hmm. and all that sort of thing, it makes ABA just sound boring and, you know, parents don't understand it or coworkers don't understand it. And they're not sure what you mean. So to be able to see that, you're like, oh, okay, that's what that means. Mm-hmm. You know, even sometimes when people hear manding, they're like, what does manding mean? If nobody's explained what manding means, they don't know it means requesting.
Yeah. Right. We started in Linwood, we have a chalkboard, and actually got paused for a little bit. We'll have to start it back up again. But we put on there the word of the week. And the very first word we used was manding, because we're constantly talking about, yeah, well, how many mans did they have today? So it's really not a hard concept, but when you hear manding, it's like, do you mean demands? Like, how many times do they demand something? And so we thought, you know what, that's a good way to jump from that. And
it is.
Yeah, so we just had like the word of the week, and
that's
we would
awesome.
Switch it up. Yeah, just a little something. And then people could weigh in if we saw stuff from the week before, like, all right, we're really seeing like FCT is something we're using quite frequently with a lot of clients.
Yeah.
Let's explain exactly what that means and how it can look different. A little bit different depending on the function of the behavior, why it's happening, and also the client that you're working with.
And it can be hard because we try to avoid the technical jargon, but certain things that we say, like, yeah. you know, FCT or yeah. manding, just becomes so much a part of what we do that we kind of forget, mm-hmm. you know, that not everybody understands what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that at Bancroft we used to have, once a month we do a research article review. And, oh, they were so hard from the Journal of Applied Behavior Analysis. I mean, again, it's somebody who's just starting the field, has no idea. I'm barely, like, I just read my first behavior plan, but I still, I'm like, I don't care. I'm going to get up early. I'm going to go to this every month. And I would go, and I would have a list afterwards. Sometimes I either underline or have a list of all the words and terms I didn't understand. And it was huge at first. But over time, it got smaller and smaller and smaller, and I was actually able to understand what the heck I read it, but I don't know what I was reading.
Right.
So
like, what did they do?
Right. Understand what they're saying. And then why maybe we'd want to do a replication of that study, or how it could be extended to the clients that we have. So I totally get that with the terminology. To me, the person who stands out most that I've worked with is Erin Curry, who's now director of our adult services in Linwood. She, when she was in school, how she learned the terms was obviously in class, but she also used them and practiced them, like using them in training and things like that. But then she kind of asks sometimes, did I use that right? Maybe not in those exact words, but she would want to know, like, am I conceptualizing this correctly? So I'm back and forth, like, you don't want to use the terms, but then sometimes you just kind of want to insert them in as well, especially when we write a behavior plan, and often we'll write what techniques we're using or what have you using the real terms. So I think it's that balance of it is, like, don't be over jargony, because there's nothing worse than walking in to a classroom to consult, and the person's like, well, first you're going to use FCT, and then you're going to use blah, blah, blah. And it's like,
oh. Okay.
Yeah, they're done. They're done.
Sure.
Yes. Talk to them like real people. And then sometimes I'll talk to them and just say, look, this is what you need to do. You need to, like, give them this every so often, blah, blah. But then later I'll come back and say, okay, so what we were using there, we'll go back to FCT. What we were using FCT, and this is an application of reinforcement, mm-hmm. and whatever kind of differential reinforcement we were using. So I do it backwards to kind of explain it. Everybody does it differently. But I was just trying to find a way to educate those that we're with without making anyone, I never want to make anybody feel stupid, because I can tell you this stuff is hard. Especially when, like, maybe you're not going to go for your master's degree, right. and maybe you're not going to be a BCBA. That doesn't mean you still don't need to know things.
That actually reminds me, there was a BCBA, she does not work for IK, who for a period of time worked at my old job. And she would come in, like, stiletto heels with her coffee.
She was a behavior analyst?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
And she would come in. And some of the words she would throw out, at that point I had my bachelor's mm-hmm. degree, she would throw out these words, and she would almost act like you were dumb if you didn't know what it meant. So you kind of would play it off, but I'd, like, jot it down, and she'd leave, and I'd Google it.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Of course.
But could you imagine being that consultant, right? So you're going in, and there you are, you're working with someone, and maybe she probably didn't even realize it. Maybe she did, I don't know. But that you really didn't connect in the way that you could have with
nope.
that person.
Right.
So it's a missed opportunity.
Like, mm-hmm. did you want to buy in on what she was saying?
Absolutely not.
Right, right. So it's part of your style, you know, and everyone has a different style, but I just have found that the ones that seem to work the best are the ones that connect with the person.
Right.
Well, and I think, too, it's important to break things down, again, like you were saying, to an understandable level. Yes, you can use the technical jargon. Some of these definitions, forget about it. I read it, and I'm like, if I didn't go to school for this, I'd have no idea what you're saying. Yeah. But then when you explain it in a way that relates to somebody's life, they're like, oh, okay, I totally get it. And sometimes yeah. that's why keeping it simple makes the most sense.
So we have just a couple other questions. I know you've talked to us for such a long time.
That's what I do.
Rachel, you have some fun ones on there. So do you want to ask, like, a couple of our fun questions?
Sure. Angela, if you had $1 million to donate, where would it go?
Interactive Kids. Sorry.
You have to donate it somewhere, though. That's true.
All right.
Well, there's always something that I've always had a little bit of passion for residential. And I would need more than $1 million for this, but one thing I always thought would be amazing is they have the old BCC buildings out in Pemberton that have just been sitting. And I've always thought, I wish somebody could buy that up. It's a college. It used to be a college. Somebody could buy that up, put residential housing there, have a school there. You could open a store mm-hmm. where the clients could, heck, they could make smoothies. They could grow stuff,
yeah.
juice, the whole nine yards, and then people could come purchase from that store. Like, I feel like the sky is the limit, but that would take a lot more than $1 million. So if anybody out there wants to do it, go for it. Just use Interactive Kids.
Let me know what you do.
We'll help you behind the scenes. Yeah. But you have to fund it.
Yes.
I'll have to remember, we just interviewed somebody that talked about that. I forget what the place was. Remember that we talked about the place where the...
Johanna Burke?
Yes. And she talked about the residential where it was just...
Yeah.
...inclusive that we want to go check out. It's like Ooh. In North Jersey. Yeah. So.
I'm all about that.
So if you had another $1 million for yourself, what would you do with it?
I have this problem where I buy too much makeup.
And it's so funny. Oh, my gosh. The whole time, from the time I was talking to you outside to in here, I'm like, look at her eye makeup, man. That is beautiful.
We're going to describe what Angela did to her eyes. She put this, like, greenish in the corner of her eye. This beautiful.
It's like an ombre eyelid.
It's this beautiful green. And then it's kind of feathered out. And then there's, like, a gold, you know, goldish tint that goes with her, like, goldish / like, muted mustard color sweater with her beautiful headband that has pinks and browns and, you know, pulls out the green in her eyes, in the corners of her eyes, and her mustard sweater.
You win.
I'm actually...
And her flawless skin.
I'm actually hiding the fact that I'm having my hair cut and dyed for the first time in a few months tonight.
Oh,
with,
fun.
This headband.
So funny. I did that the other day because I'm really bad. Right, I'm going this afternoon after work, and I'm really bad with my gray.
Did you take my 2 o'clock? Wait, no, you didn't take.
They're about to throw hands.
For me. And I gave it up because it's my mom's birthday. Don't
with
you
Brian
know
Lopez?
Call?
Yes, with Brian Lopez. Megan and Rachel are going to throw hands.
So the receptionist called me and she's like, is everything okay? Because you canceled your appointment. And Brian gets really upset. And I was like,
you canceled
well,
on Brian?
Tell Brian that I'm a little upset about him. One, for his gorgeous vacation in Punta Cana and seeing all of those crazy pictures.
You're right.
And I said, can I reschedule for Friday? So that's so funny.
Well, they had me scheduled for yesterday, but he was still in Punta Cana then. So he just got back. Oh, yes.
That's pretty hysterical.
It all works out. Brian, we love you. We will never leave you. I have too many gray hairs that need to be taken care of. But anyway, I'm glad you're getting your hair done.
That and I have, I'm obsessed with decor. A little too much.
Okay. Like home decor?
Oh, yes.
I'm like making sure it's on a makeup line or something.
No, like Hobby Lobby and Home Goods. Uh-huh. And, it's a problem. Yes. It's a major. That and one of my goals this year is to buy a house. So we'll see. Single mom life.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate it. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we have to move on with our
So content. Logan does her thing.
I'm curious now if you answered these questions already. Ugh.
Wait, what do you mean? Because
we'll find out.
She was here before, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, I was here with somebody before, so I was more of like a secondary.
You're the backup dancer.
Angela was with Casey Cardi, one of our amazing moms here.
She's ridiculously awesome.
Yeah,
I want to be her when I grow up. Even now, we're almost the same age.
So listen to that episode. Right.
I'll link it below. All right, ready for Friday? Well, you're not from. Okay. Anyway. I don't know why that was coming out of my mouth. All right. A 4-letter word that starts with A.
Jeez, this is harder than I thought.
I've started thinking about them after I ask it, trying to be like the person. Like, I can't.
To be able to like throw them a lifeline if they need it.
Ants.
Ants. Hope you don't have them. Favorite store.
Ulta.
Tool you never leave home without.
My cell phone. My personal and my work cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Stay in or go out?
Oh, gosh, both. I can't pick.
Your go-to lazy dinner?
Pizza. Mm-hmm. Usually I order a salad because I'm trying to be good, but for my kids, pizza.
Your favorite hobby?
Crafting, which I never get to do anymore. Or reading. Same thing.
Agreed.
Your favorite pizza topping?
Pepperoni or meatball? Or both.
I never had meatball before, but like then Teddy got it, and I was like, oh, that's different.
That's, that's my son's favorite, is meatball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your favorite movie?
Oh, gosh.
Or TV show, if that's easier.
Angels in the Outfield.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Since the time I was little,
that was always one of my favorites. And I showed it to my kids, and they were like, meh. Meanwhile, I watched it 100 times when I was little.
Right.
With Tony Danza or Danny Glover?
I don't know names.
Danny Glover, right?
I'm terrible.
I forgot about that movie.
Yeah.
Huh.
Go watch it.
Your favorite rainy day activity?
I'd love to say sleeping, but my kids would never let me. Right. Either scrolling on my phone more than I should or reading a book.
And your life motto?
Be kind to everyone because you never know what somebody's going through.
Yep. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Thank you,
Thank
Angela.
You for having me again.
Of course.
I didn't get kicked out after the first time.
We even welcomed you back.
I just want to comment. I'm pretty amazed with your memory, Rachel. So Angels in the Outfield stars Danny Glover, Tony Danza, and Christopher Lloyd. Also has future stars such as Joseph Gordon-Levitt in the lead, Adrian Brody, Matthew McConaughey, and Neil McDonough.
Oh, Matthew McConaughey.
Wow.
I love him.
Yes.
So watch that this weekend and watch How It Doesn't Translate. Like, I love The Goonies, which I still think does translate, but my kids don't love that one as much.
Yeah.
Mine don't either, but you know what they do love? Everything Everywhere All at Once. That has,
I've never seen that.
That has data in it from The Goonies.
Yeah.
Highly recommend. I know there's a lot of buzz about it because of the Oscars and the Golden Globes.
Right.
But it was an awesome, awesome movie.
Did you know that Chunk represents him as his lawyer?
He what?
Yeah, the guy. The kid
Chunk, right?
He's now a lawyer.
Oh.
And he represents him.
He represents Data?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. I just read that. That was in, I think, People magazine.
He went to become a lawyer. How about that?
Because that's about as much as I can afford to read right now. It's like somebody has about half a paragraph, and that's enough information for me.
And you know what, Megan? That's okay. Yes, that's okay. Yes. But keep buying the books.
Yes.
Thanks. This was so much fun. It really was. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. Looking for more? Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app and Instagram at The Interactive Journey.
Questions, comments, or want to be a guest on our show? We'd love to hear from you. You can message us at podcast@interactivekids.com or on Instagram at The Interactive Journey.